from davidrenicky.com. It's David Rennicky himself. David, hello, sir.
Where you been, Bill? Because I'm still here from last time.
Yes. Well, it's, yeah, you've been on the phone that long. It's been amazing. Hate to have to pay that
week.
Bill.
Been a busy week, in fact. Yeah.
Certainly has been. Now, well, you and I have spoken about Lost in Space on Netflix, and look, I'm five episodes in, and I'm a little bit disappointed. It's not what I thought it was like. Penny's different. Judy's different. The angst between the husband and wife in the series has got me. But there is hope. Netflix are now honouring the women who should have gone to space, David. What's that all about?
Yeah, this is something I don't understand why it's taken so long for this to eventuate. But look, Netflix are putting out a series now to highlight the fact that there were women involved with the space program who were just had the wrong thing done by them in the early years. They were invited to become part of the space program, to become astronauts, and they went through the training like all the others. Now, they're called the Forgotten 13, and astronaut Eileen Collins is behind this, I believe, to a certain degree. She was actually the command pilot of the space shuttle in 1995.
I didn't know that, okay.
Yeah, before all of this, America didn't seem interested, I guess would be the word.
Yeah.
They had the capability, but they weren't interested in putting women in space there. But the Russians did. I mean, Valentina Tereshkova flew in the 60s just after Gagarin flew. And we had to wait till 80-something till Sally Ride went into space, first American woman.
Yeah.
There were 13 women who trained in the American space program who were discarded, thrown away and told, "We don't want you," because the doctors at the time at NASA felt that the female body was not up to the rigors of space.
Oh, rot!
They felt that the human frame, the female frame, was too fragile. And this is the worst part. The ladies are going to get a real, real bad look on their face when I say this. But it really did happen, and we regret it. Because NASA was a real blokey thing, you know. And
yeah.
One of the directives from NASA's medical people at the time, I wouldn't call it a team. I'd call this a hack-up job, a hatchet job. One of the elite medical team who did the test. And by the way, the women were trained alongside the blokes, harder than the blokes were. They poured water in their ears and spun them around in circles. All sorts of things. And in most cases, the women did better than the blokes did. So at the end of it, they trotted out seven blokes and stuck them in front of the camera for the world to see. And they were the best test pilots in America. But the women were also test pilots and just as good. But they were told that in the view of NASA, the frame was too fragile. And here's the worst part. The ladies are going to hate this. The women's menstrual cycle was brought into it.
Yeah. Now, women can handle this. They don't need guys telling them, you know, how to sort
look,
it.
In those years, this is how it was looked at. And they felt that, you know, they wanted somebody who was mentally competent and wasn't prone to mood swings. I'm glad that I'm not in the studio and you don't have women producers sitting around near me because, I mean, they would be just fuming at the moment, and so they should. But look, it's been redressed in Hidden Figures, that movie, and the book, of course. And The Forgotten 13 is actually a book that you can buy. It's a great book to read. And every year these women get together, the ones that are left over. Jerry Cobb is the lady who runs all this and gets it going. And I think she's featured in the movie as well. I've got the story on my website. It's good, well worth reading. But now they're doing, I see Netflix are doing something on it. They're going
good.
To recreate. For some reason, they're bringing it forward. And I think it's about time. It's going to be a great story once they get it up and running. So these women never did travel in space, but they were trained alongside the blokes to do the right sort of job. And America paraded out in front of the world. The Mercury 7, who we know now, went on to become John Glenn and Gus Grissom and Carpenter and all the people that eventually walked on the moon. But it wasn't until the middle 80s until an American woman flew, and that was Sally Ride.
Yeah. Have a look at davidrenicky.com, and the story's called Netflix, The Women Who Should Have Gone to Space. Details on that, and we can't wait for them to bring it out, which it shouldn't be too far away either, actually. Now, we love the mysteries of space. Everyone has always asked dark matter. What are we referring to? And we mentioned that in the universe. And you're asking the question, are white holes, not black holes, but white holes the secret ingredient to dark matter, David?
Have you ever heard of white holes?
I haven't. I've heard of arseholes.
Yeah.
not white holes.
Oh, I hope you can take that out.
Yeah, we'll edit that, thank you.
All right. Look, white holes are the opposite end to a black hole. I mean, it sounds logical, doesn't it? Wormholes are another term too. The same thing. Wormhole and a white hole are pretty much the same sort of a thing. But a wormhole probably more directly refers to a black hole. But at the end of a black hole, the question has been raised, what is a white hole? Is there another end to it where everything comes out the other end like a corkscrew when you go to the bottom part? Does all the matter that gets sucked into a black hole get regurgitated back out into the universe as in a form of dark matter that makes up a lot of this dark matter that we hear and see and know about in the universe? We don't know. It's a hypothesis, not a theory, it's a hypothesis. And a theory is something built on fact and observation. A hypothesis is something like a theory built on a theory. So it's just an unknown factor. Whether we can ever find out what's inside a black hole or whether it can go through one is another issue altogether, because we do know that whatever goes into a black hole never comes out again. It all stays in there, and it's crushed beyond recognition. Everything gets crushed down to a fine point called a point of infinite density. So it looks like, the fabled sci-fi wormhole or white hole may not be possible in nature. But then again, we've seen so many other things in the last 50 to 100 years in space science that seemed impossible as well.
Look at a movie called The Black Hole, came out from Disney in 1979.
Oh, what a great movie that was.
It was, even though the special effects weren't that good, just a great concept.
I remember you're right up close to the black hole when they're inside the spacecraft looking at it. Well, you wouldn't get that close to the start to a black hole because you'd be consumed by the enormous pull of the black hole.
Well, somehow Maximilian Schell's character managed to stabilise his crew and that ship there. But, I mean, there was all sort of weirdness going on.
I've forgotten all about it. What great special effects they were.
YouTube it too, my friend. And speaking about space stations, Gateway, it's the latest thing NASA's putting together. We did mention it last week, but construction is due to start. We got a date, have we?
This is going to come about. I was hoping that this would eventuate a lot earlier than what it did. It should be orbiting around 2025. It hasn't been built yet, but it will be put together once they get the Orion program up and running, the American Space Program back and up and running like it used to be, or similar to what it used to be. It's called the Gateway Program, the Lunar Orbital Platform Gateway. It's NASA's staging area, if you will, for movement away from this planet. Eventually, it's going to be a way station for astronauts traveling to the moon to refresh, to refuel, pick up supplies, and then go to the moon and settle on the surface there, and or go to Mars too. Because, look, it currently costs $10,000 per pound to launch anything from planet Earth. If you've got it already situated in space somewhere along the journey, you don't have to carry that. The extra weight can be used to provide a cheaper cost to whoever's, taking a service there, whether it be a ticket by a space tourist or whether it be a price paid by a company to have something launched into space. So watch out for this. This Gateway is something I read about and saw in movies and comic books way back 30 or 40 years ago, and it's becoming a reality. I think it should have been done a long time ago. I mean, we've been buggerizing around in low Earth orbit long enough now.
The ISS has been a joke, really.
Yeah, it's getting a bit too long in the tooth now, and it's about time they did finish it. What they're going to do with it, I don't know. I think it would be a great gateway if they took this there, and put it in its place there. Say you're building something.
NASA was only ever...
It's not very functional. It's only a scientific station. It's not really meant for habitation, for in a comfy environment by... Yeah. travellers or whatever.
And if NASA want to make money, you have to make space tourism a thing. I think that's the future.
It is it. Space tourism is the up-and-coming thing where people are going to want to go for these trips. They want to travel. They're going to want to travel to the moon. They want to go for a suborbital flight around the moon, come back home. And they want to be able to walk on the surface there in the future. These are people that haven't been born yet. They will eventually be born into a time where technology will allow them to do that. At the moment, it's like the pre-aeroplane days that we're talking about. We could be back 100 years ago talking about aeroplanes, and saying, well, what do you think it's going to end up like? Will you be able to travel in comfort? You reckon you could ever have a cup of tea or have a meal on board, These are the things we're talking about now. So the future is wide open there. The technology is there. But the big thing is happening now, and it's taken a long time for it to move. It's only we've been waiting for people like Jeff Bezos, like Elon Musk, like Branson to come along. And they wouldn't have come along had not the dot-com boom been
That's
what
right,
it was,
yeah.
you know. So things are happening now, and I think, you know, young people being born now and their kids in the future are going to experience holidays in places you and I could even only ever dream of.
All right, more at davidrenicki.com on that thing. And one last thing, David. We mentioned this before, the New England region of New South Wales obviously being set up as a dark sky region for those who have telescopes. I'm thinking Tamworth may be looking for a new resident.
Look, I had a word with these guys. They're building a big space complex up there, and I'm just sort of, they've touched base with me. We've been talking about it.
Have you?
It's a $1.8 million funding for Regional Astronomy and Science Centre. What a great idea. They've already got Low Observatory up there, which is terrific, like a huge privately funded, but this one's going to allow school groups to come in. They're going to be able to have big conventions there. It's going to be one of the classic astronomy sites and places in Australia to go to in the future. What a great place to put it, in the great New England area of New South Wales, where it's really dark, as you know what.
And I think in the future you'll be leading tours there quite regularly, so we're looking forward to that. That'd be a nice little competition we could run.
Yeah.
Tours with David. Anyway, davidrenicki.com has all those details. Of course, anything more you want to find out, have a look at that website. Till next week, David.
Thank you very much, Bill Karen.